Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and demographer William Fry joins us now with his new book, Diversity Explosion, How New Racial Demographics Are Remaking America, in which he observes things like a cultural generation gap, the great black migration in reverse, a new paradigm of neighborhood segregation, and more. Mr. Fry is a demographer with the Brookings Institution and a population studies professor at the University of Michigan. William Fry, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Brian.
And let me jump in on one of those ideas that I think is central to your book, the cultural generation gap. What do you mean by that term?
Well, this is something that's already reared its head, and it's probably going to rear its head a little bit further. We're in the middle of a big demographic revolution in the United States. I call it the diversity explosion. But what's happening right now is the younger part of the population is growing almost totally from the minority groups, Hispanics, Asians, multiracial people, and, of course, the older minorities, blacks, American Indians, and so forth. Between 2000 and 2010, there was an absolute decline in whites under age 18. So this is a huge growth that's going on. And you know, it's a group of people, I don't have to tell people in New York, in a multi-ethnic environment, interracial dating, interracial marriage, it's the future of America. On the other hand, there are these older baby boomers. Although the lower, the younger part of the age distribution is losing whites, us baby boomers, I'm one of them, are moving into these older ages. And part of the cultural generation gap is their different views about politics. Really, and the part of a lot of baby boomers, not as much acceptance of this new minority population that's coming into it. And it takes the form of attitudinal surveys which show that older baby boomers don't think the government should put quite as much support into the kinds of programs that benefit younger people. They're worried about their taxes, where the younger part of the population looks at it exactly the opposite. And the racial composition, there's a kind of a dramatic chart in my book where I show that people under age 35, over 40% of them are minorities, and the biggest minority is Hispanics. For people over age 50, which includes most of the baby boomers and the older population, that's over 70% white, and the biggest minority group there are African Americans. And there's kind of a divide, because both populations are going to be growing, I think is going to affect us, and I hope that closing this cultural gap, we're going to really need to, because if this country is going to be productive, if our labor force is going to thrive, we're going to have to educate these young people so that they can take the place of these retiring baby boomers.
Right. In watching the elections this month, I saw that 75% of the electorate nationwide was white, and that was up from 72% in Obama's reelection year, 2012. What percentage of the population today is white? Because it seems like whites are still voting in much larger numbers than these younger people of color in the shift that you were just describing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's only about 65% white. And I think what we're going to find, as we go forward, the 2020 census is going to show that about 40% of the population is going to be minority. Now, the reason there's that disparity, of course, is, first of all, there's a simple demographic reason, is that a lot of the minorities are under age 18 and they're not eligible to vote.
And younger people don't vote at the same rate as older people.
Yes, that as well, and especially in these midterm elections, which a lot has been written about.
Right.
And so that's where I think the younger part of the cultural generation gap crowd is really going to take a beating until they start turning out to vote in the midterms.
I wonder if younger people are even more celebrity-oriented than older people. Everybody in America is too celebrity-oriented. But mm-hmm. That is to say that younger people are even more likely than others not to vote in elections that don't have a presidential candidate at the top of the ticket, because there isn't that star power to, oh, I'm going to choose Romney or I'm going to choose Obama. If you're just at your local members of Congress or even the Senate, then there isn't that kind of celebrity juice.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. You need to get people geared up for something that's big. And certainly the first non-white presidential candidate did a great deal in that respect. Not only were turnout rates high, registration rates were high, and of course the percentage voting for Obama among these racial minorities was high, and there's this huge fall off in this midterm election where there's a congressional candidate who you might not know the name of, and nobody's really getting you excited about it.
Plus, if you didn't say it already, many of the younger people, even if they're of age to vote, they're not citizens yet, or that kind of thing. So that also suppresses proportional representation, at least temporarily. And while we're talking about diversity in politics and voting, I mentioned on yesterday's show, because I was just looking it up, some of the stark racial voting disparities in recent elections. And I wonder what you think of it, given the book you just wrote. In 2012, Obama beat Romney by 5 million votes, but Romney beat Obama among whites by 20 percentage points, 59-39. What a disparity. Andrew Cuomo was just elected governor in a walk against Rob Astorino, but Astorino tied him among whites. And in the new poll that prompted this conversation in New York City, Mayor de Blasio has a 34% approval rating only among whites, 34, 71 among blacks. So 50 years after the Civil Rights Act, there remains a very serious perception divide and experience divide among blacks and whites in the U.S. And I guess my question to you is, having looked at the diversity explosion for your book, many colored, where do Latinos fit in?
Latinos are somewhere in between. They go up and down, and it varies by part of the country. In some elections, the Latinos in Texas, in fact, in this most recent one for the Texas governor, he didn't take the majority of Latinos, but he took more than a national candidate would have taken, perhaps because I think one of his relatives or his wife is Latino. I don't recall. But it depends on which part of the country you're talking about. And I think Latinos also are very serious about being paid attention to with their issues. I think part of the reason we didn't see a big Latino turnout in the last election is because many felt that the administration or the Democratic Party did not pay enough attention to the comprehensive immigration reform. But there are lots of other issues that I think they really want to be noticed. And, I think it's good for democracy, really.
And you describe Asians in America in your new book as the new minority surge. And in the 2012 election, they voted for Obama in an even slightly higher percentage than Latinos, around 70%, even though one could argue that East Asians especially should make good Republicans. Personal responsibility, pull yourself up by your tiger mom bootstraps, learn English fast, don't ask for bilingualism, more intact families, an average income, I think, even higher than whites. But they didn't vote like whites. Have you looked into why?
Well, I just know that this is a new trend among the Asians. If you look back further 10 or 15 years ago, it was quite different. Many of the older Asian populations were sort of Republican-oriented, especially because of the strong stand we took in Southeast Asia against the communist regimes that were there. But among the newer and the younger Asian populations, perhaps the Silicon Valley group, people who are interested in the new economy, for some reason that the Obama candidacy clicked with them. And, it's not clear that that's going to continue to be the case. In fact, the midterm election showed that the Asian support for the Democratic congressional candidates really fell down. So it may be up and down with the Asians.
Listeners, any questions for William Fry, author of Diversity Explosion, How New Racial Demographics Are Remaking America? And coming up next in about 5 minutes, really looking forward to a dialogue between two authors who are pretty well known and have written books that have changed people's minds. And this will be part of our series, Books That Have Changed Your Mind. And we have Azar Nafisi, the author of Reading Lolita in Tehran, and of her newest book, The Republic of Imagination, America in Three Books, in conversation with me and Jacqueline Woodson, the author of many books for children and teens, including the book for which she just won a National Book Award, Brown Girl Dreaming, a memoir in free verse. So Jacqueline Woodson and Azar Nafisi together coming up in just a few minutes. 212-433-WNYC right now for William Fry, 212-433-9692. What's this new paradigm of racial segregation that your book refers to? You have a chapter about that.
That's right. Well, I think what's happening, of course, is the new minorities are part of the American city and the American suburbs in new parts of the country. So as we see a dispersion of Hispanics away from the traditional melting pot areas into metropolitan areas in the southeast, even into the Midwest, this is filtering into different neighborhoods. And what's happened is the old black-white segregation paradigm. And black-white segregation, let's not mince words, it's still pretty high in the United States. But it has come down somewhat, very pervasively across the country. Modest declines almost everywhere. Some of the places where it's come down the most is where there's been growth in the Latino and then the Asian populations. There's kind of this mix of groups. When that happens in a metropolitan area, it cuts down the segregation levels across all of the different groups. And I think that's kind of an interesting phenomenon. It's not just the typical, you know, us versus them kind of thing that you would see back 20, 30 years ago. And I'm hopeful that in the growing parts of the country, which are attracting blacks, Hispanics, Asians, a good part of the South is like this, we're going to see dramatic declines in residential segregation.
And you mentioned earlier a hope that the younger, more diverse members of the population can get educated to replace the retiring baby boomers in productive positions in the workforce. But putting it that way makes it sound like you have some doubt that this generation is going to get educated as well as previous generations.
Well, I think here really the onus is on all levels of government and, you know, really public attention to this issue. As we talked about before, part of the reason there's this generation gap is we have whites moving out of the labor force. In 10 years, we're going to absolutely have an actual decline in the nation's white population, and a lot of that will be moving out of the labor force. And that means that these folks are going to have to be replaced by new minorities. It's a good thing we have these new minorities to take their place, but what we really need is to make sure that they're prepared. And I think we know that a lot of the school systems in very segregated areas of the country are not as good as they might be. Funding for schools is local, it's state, and even some national funding is involved. And you know, part of the cultural generation gap is getting the rest of the country to understand the priority of making these young people readily prepared to move into the labor force, to improve our productivity, to make our middle class larger, and for the sake of these older folks to help pay into their Social Security monies.
Do you compare the United States to other industrialized countries that may not be as diverse, that may not have as much immigration primarily, to level out a little bit the percentage of people in the workforce to the percentage of older baby boom and older retirees? I mean, there are some countries in Europe and in Japan, I think, where this is going to be a crisis in the way that it's not in the United States because we have more immigration. Would you put it that way?
Yeah. I mean, these new minorities and the younger part of our population are really a gift to this country because, as you say, when you look at Japan, Japan is already showing a loss in their labor force age population because the elderly population is so large and because they have low fertility and very little immigration. The same for Italy, the same for Germany, and many other countries. So we really have an opportunity here to make sure that we do have this abundance of young people to make them ready to move into the mainstream of society. And the other good thing about it is a lot of them have international connections. I mean, this is becoming a global economy, and it's really important to have people be able to speak two or three languages when they move into a job and, be able to connect with their relatives and friends or other people of similar backgrounds in other parts of the world. It's a real advantage.
Adina in Passaic, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adina.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So I would like to share why, in my opinion, as a young white person or just as a young person, why I think people don't vote so much.
Please.
My personal experience and what I heard from my friends is I'm in my 20s, and I never actually voted. I always, before every election, I feel like I really want to vote and I feel like it's very important. And I try to do some research and I try to decide who's better. And I look at all these ads and I feel like I don't know who's worse because the candidates, instead of telling me why I should vote for them, why they're good for the position, they're trashing the other candidates and saying, oh, don't vote for this one because he's going to ruin this and he's so bad at that. but and you're promising you things are not going to happen, but nobody's telling me why I should vote for them, what the good things about them are. And also, I feel like it's kind of a like the whole politics thing is so sad because everybody is just trashing each other. So first of all, I feel like if they're trashing someone, there's probably something bad about the other person. And also, if they're trashing, that means they're not such a good person because they're trashing someone else. That means also something bad about them.
It's a tragedy. And Adina, you have just given voice to one of the horrors, I think, that's one of the biggest horrors in our electoral system or the way politics has evolved. And do you know they're doing it for exactly the reason that you stated? I think, and William Fry, you can give me your opinion on this too, but from what I understand, all this negative advertising during campaigns is intended precisely to suppress the vote, to make people as disgusted as it sounds like you are, Adina, and take the risk on the part of the candidate who puts out the ad that the reduced vote that they're going to have because people are disgusted with them for trashing the other guy is going to be less than the reduced vote for the other guy because people are going to be suspicious of them because of, you know, the content of the ad.
And, exactly.
And so there's a sort of race to the bottom of turnout that candidates engage in, and it leaves somebody like you, who would really like to participate in our democracy in that way, to have to go out and do the research about what their ideas really are on your own.
Right. And young people are usually in school and working, trying to start a family, and they don't have time to go spend hours doing research deeper than the surface that what everyone's talking about, which is basically trashing each other.
So not that this solves the problem, but you can go out next election and fool them at their own game, do your research, decide to vote, and convince your friends to do affirmative research and vote too. Ha! How about that?
Yeah.
Anyway,
if I can weigh in.
Yes. And Adina, thank you. Please call us again. And William Fry, we have 30 seconds.
Okay. I would just like to, you know, I think this is someone like Adina, I think, are the kinds of votes new politicians should be looking for. Young people, whether they're white or minority, I think, you know, these are the idealistic voters. And I think they're the ones doing the Internet. I think if we eventually have voting over the Internet, I think that will make a huge difference in what's going on. So to me, this is an opportunity for people who want to track this group of people because they're ripe for it. They're looking for it. And I, too, am sick of all these negative ads. I just turn off the TV when they come on.
Demographer William Fry's new book is Diversity Explosion, How New Racial Demographics Are Remaking America. Thanks so much.
Sure. I enjoyed it.